মুকুন্দ বিহারে গোপী জন্মাদ গিরিধর দ্বারে কুন্দ বিহারে গোপী জন্মাদ গিরিধর দ্বারে
বিষ্ণু পরম পরমহংস ভারতবাচক ছয় হর্ষিত বাসুদেবায়
ওম নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায়
Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tenth Canto, Chapter 8, Text 8 and 9. This is the chapter where Lord Krishna shows the universal form. We'll read the transliteration first. There's two verses here. Yeah, that's right. Kamsaha. Kamsa, Papamatihi, very sinful, having a polluted mind. Sakyam, friendship. Tava, your. Cha, also. Anaka Dundubhe, Avasudev. Devakyaha, Devaki. Ashtamakarbaha, the eighth pregnancy, ma, not, stri, a woman, bhavatum arhati, is possible to be, iti, in this way, samchintayam, considering, shuddha, and hearing this news, devakya, of devaki, dharika vachaha, the message from the daughter. Api, although there was Hantagata Ashankaha, there is a possibility that Kamsa would take steps to kill this child. Tahi, therefore, Tat, that incident, Maha, for us, Anayat Bhavit, may not be very good. Kamshaha papumati sakyam. Tavachana kudundubhe. Devakya ashtamo ghabho. Nastri bhavitumarhati. Iti samchintayam shuddha. Devakya darika vachaha. Apihanta gata shankas. Apihanta gata shankas. Tahita no nyato bhavet. Please chant. Vaishnavis. Translation, please. Translation, purport by Srila Prabhupada. Kamsa is both a great diplomat and a very sinful man. Therefore, having heard from Yogamaya, the daughter of Devaki, that the child who would kill him has already been born somewhere else, having heard that the eighth pregnancy of Devaki could not bring forth a female child, and having understood your friendship with Vasudev Kamsa, upon hearing that the purificatory process has been performed by me, the priest of the Yadu dynasty may certainly consider all these points and suspect that Krishna is the son of Devaki and Vasudev. Then he might take steps to kill Krishna. That would be a catastrophe. Report. Kamsa knew very well that Yogamaya was, after all, the maidservant of Krishna and Vishnu, and that although Yogamaya had appeared as the daughter of Devaki, she might have forbidden to disclose this fact. Actually, this was what had happened. Ragamuni argued very soberly that his taking part in performing the reformatory process for Krishna would give rise to many doubts, so that Kamsa might take very severe steps to kill the child. Kamsa had already sent many demons to attempt to kill this child, but none of them had survived. If Ragamuni were to perform the purificatory process, Kamsa's suspicions would be fully confirmed, and he would take very severe steps. Ragamuni gave this warning to Nanda Maharaj. Namaste, Saraswati Devi Guru Rinpoche, Nivishayusha Srinivari Vishtar. So we had a nice review of what has happened up to this point by Dravida Prabhu yesterday, and that the problem with having a big celebration is again being emphasized by Ragamuni to Nanda Maharaj, that this would call attention to Krishna possibly being that person who would kill Kamsa because he's born from Vasudeva and Devaki. So Ragamuni is explaining that, please, let's just do something very small. Otherwise, our most beloved Krishna could be harmed. And of course, he's representing all the residents of Gokul, in that it would be a catastrophe. This is what everyone would definitely feel and think, that if anything was to happen to Krishna, then their lives would be finished. Some things already did happen, and it was devastating for them. So Ragamuni is understanding the mind of Kamsa. And Kamsa's mind is that of a total materialistic demon, as it's described in Bhagavad Gita, very befitting. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am an enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. So it's said that if the shoe fits, wear it. So this is a perfect size for King Kamsa. He fits it perfectly. And he's performed horrible acts, killing innocent little babies and different people, thinking that it might be that obstacle in his path. The demons don't want to be anything except for the top of the totem pole, and they're very fearful. So if we enter Kamsa's mind, we will see that that's where he's at. He's very fearful. And most materialists are very fearful, especially of death and of losing their control over their dependence. And in this case, losing the control over the entire world and populace. We saw that also with Hiranyakashipu. They didn't want anything to get in their way. And if it did get in their way, like it says in Bhagavad Gita, I shall just kill them. So Kamsa is at that point. So we have to be also remembering that when a lot of us became devotees, that our parents were thinking that Krishna's captured them, I have to do something. And their mentality actually became very degraded by most of them. We were remembering the other day, many of the parents have come around since then, after 20, 30, 40 years, but in the beginning, their mentality was very much like Kamsa's, and that they were feeling that, you know, I've been stolen of my position as a nice parent now. My child is being swept away by this Krishna character. Or in my case, is Srila Prabhupada. They're very envious of Srila Prabhupada. So we have to see that this mentality, this demoniac mentality, really ends up in sinful activities. I mean, even the parents got to the point of deprogramming their children, which was really illegal. And it did go to court. And they tried to bribe them, also very illegal, you know, waving millions of dollars in front of their faces. And some devotees had to go to psychologists, others were abused in different ways mentally. So this is what can happen. We've seen it happen even in other countries. Of course, Russia was completely against Krishna coming into their country. So they took all horrible actions against the devotees. You can read about them in that Salted Bread book, which are really, you know, mind-boggling how they could get away with such a thing. And even to this day, even in the country of Belarus, which is communist, we happened to go there one time, and we asked some of the ladies there, you know, how come it is that you bring your little clothes in your bag and then you change clothes when you get off the bus? You know, they were traveling sometimes an hour, 2 hours to come to the temple, and it seemed like everyone was changing their clothes. And they said that, actually, my mother doesn't know I come here. And if so, then they would really be harassed horribly. So it's very dangerous for them to become a devotee. Even in some countries now, it's dangerous to become a devotee. Although, like Argentina and Bolivia, that has gradually come around. But in the beginning, it was very, very difficult because people are very envious of Krishna. They don't want the parent and the nation and everything. They don't want their authority to be threatened, especially by God, who in their case, you know, doesn't exist, or it's somebody else rather than Krishna. So this is the Kamsa mentality, that they must reign supreme. But now we're seeing that Krishna is reigning supreme in many, many countries, that we've had many successes all over the world. Srila Prabhupada confirms that there are actually two parties. There is the demoniac, or he called the godless party, and then there's the Vishnu party, or the godlike party. And these two parties are, that's pretty much all there is explained in this material world. And the godless party is very complicated. They're full of diplomacy and all the, you know, nasty things that go along with that. And it's very, I remember when I was, even now, if I look at the newspaper and see all the diplomacy and all the things going on, I get like sick to my stomach. I just can't understand. It's just so complicated and so backbiting and everything that I don't see how anyone can have anything to do with it. But then you look at the, you know, the Vishnu party, the godly party. It's very simple. Prabhupada always wanted to keep Krishna consciousness extremely simple. And therefore, they're very much happier people, hippies to happies, and we're always doing good for others. The demoniac principle is that as much as I can manipulate for my own happiness, that's all I can think about. How I can satisfy all my greed, all my selfish interests, and whatever diplomacy I have to use, that I will do. And therefore, it's no one's really happy. They're always bickering amongst themselves and with everybody else in the world. But we saw that the Raja Dharma, or the society where, you know, Krishna is supreme and Krishna is the center, then everything is much more peaceful, because we're trying to lead everyone to some salvation of some part, to some liberation from the repetition of birth and death again and again, coming back. Prabhupada actually equated democracy with diplomacy, because it has such a polluted atmosphere. First of all, unqualified persons are trying to elect other persons who, of course, are going to be unqualified. They're not going to really understand what a saintly person is, what a sinful person is. And then after some time, they find that those leaders actually, some of the sinful activities leak out and get a little bit public sometimes, and they get disappointed. And then they lose trust. You lose trust in the leaders, and then the whole thing falls apart. There can't really be any success in such a society. And we've seen it true. Many of the countries now are, in arms against their leaders and kicking them out, pulling them out of office after many, many years of horrible leadership. Srila Prabhupada actually, he notes that it's kind of like a syndrome that in a democratic government, which is run by diplomacy, that the leader gets, in that post by usually crooked means. We see it happening even in the elections. There's so many illegal things going on. And then there's all these false promises and everything. And so these leaders in their posts, very quickly they can't manage things. And then there's unrest, internal unrest. And then, so what do? They say, oh, actually, look over here. Let's go over there and try to help with that war or do that war. And they completely try to divert the attention of the internal mess. And then we find ourselves in wars that we have no business in. And meanwhile, everything is falling apart. We can't, establish anything over there. And our internal workings here are also unsuccessful. And what we end up with is a bunch of wars. We have hot wars, which are very fiery, and so many things are being killed and everything. And then there's the cold wars that Prabhupada said actually are diplomacy. This is also killing us in different ways. But the amazing thing is that Srila Prabhupada says that that the leader should learn diplomacy. And we see that in many of the Vedic incidences throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, throughout the Mahabharata especially. So many things are going on in the diplomatic level. Prabhupada says there's just four principles that should be learned in diplomacy, ways to manipulate people and their dependents. And one is, first of all, is legal order. There should be laws. And we find that, unfortunately, leaders will make laws and demolish laws and whenever they want. If you go into the Lachwa Codes office and you want to know some kind of a law, it depends who picks up the phone. It really does. One person will say, well, actually, this is in order, and you don't have to bring this, and you don't have to worry about this. And the next day, you pick up the phone, and the codes department will say, well, actually, no, this was gone. This code's been gone a long time. Actually, we found that true when we were trying to get a little mobile home over here, They all of a sudden said, oh, well, that law's gone. Now we have a new one. Well, you're going to have to spend this much money. So completely, according to their income, necessities, obviously. And then there's the second one is actually pacification, learning how to sometimes glorify people, or to, like we see very often in the races for election, is Promises, false promises. I promise you this if I get in office, and this is going to happen, and that's going to happen. And so don't worry. Everything's going to be all right. Just vote for me. And so this is a lot of false propaganda. But it should be learned, and it gets their votes. And then the third one is to offer a post to somebody. Oh, you don't like this, you don't like that. Well, here, just be in charge of this. You'll be happy then, right? Everything's okay? And we find that happens a lot. And then the last principle is the use of weapons. And here we've seen that Kamsa is at that point. He's just resulted, kill Krishna. I can't do anything else but kill him. Vasudeva did use his diplomacy to try to arrange that Devaki didn't get killed right away. He used, the scriptures. He preached to Kamsa, and then he tried to pacify him and said, okay, I promise you that I'll give you all my sons as they're born. And then later, of course, he broke his promise like was said yesterday. And so he was also very good at diplomacy. And Kamsa's officers, we also remember that Kamsa had been killing, trying to get rid of Krishna in different ways, and then he got kind of thrown over by Devaki and then Yogamaya, and then he stopped killing, and then his officers got hold of him and said, actually, if you don't do this, and if this doesn't happen, and that, he got completely turned over to back to the killing scene again. So he was actually manipulated by his dependents. Srila Prabhupada, he also used diplomacy. He taught it to us for Sankirtan. He said, use that pacification. He said, just glorify them. Oh, you most intelligent, educated person. Very nice. It's so wonderful. And now you can forget that and take this book and learn what the real truth is. So he taught us that. Ivani Kashyapu, he was expert. He tried to teach diplomacy to Prahlad, and that was a main subject. Diplomacy 101 up to the highest rank of getting your master's in it. But Prahlad Maharaj didn't want it. He's just a very simple devotee. Kamsa also tried sitting on his lap and saying, oh, you sweet little son, darling of mine. But that didn't work. And finally, he used the weapons. Of course, Nrisingadev got hold of him. So we see also in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, that Raghunath Das's father tried to use that principle of giving him a post. He made him very wealthy, and then he said, ah, okay, I'll give you a wife, and then everything will be fine. You have a nice wife, and you'll be a wonderful husband, and you'll be a nice householder. But that didn't work either. He left and had to go see Lord Chaitanya. But Raghunath Das, he also used that diplomacy on his uncles. He actually tried to he had to get them out of a hot spot one time. They were exploiting trying to take some money from the government, and they were going to be arrested. And Raghunath Das had to, use a lot of manipulative words and things like that to get him off the hook. And then we see Sanatana and Rupa Goswami, they use their principles of diplomacy to escape and convince them to, that, oh, we're just studying, and we're sick or something like that. And then they had to pay their way to get out to be able to go to see Lord Chaitanya again. And Ramananda Roy also, he was a diplomat of sorts, kingly, priestly type person. And he used his diplomacy also on the Lord himself. When Pachaparudra Maharaj wanted to visit the Lord, Ramananda Roy had to use all kinds of manipulative ways to soften Lord Chaitanya's heart, to convince him that he should have a meeting with the king. So there can be transcendental diplomacy, even for ladies. We see in the Ramayana, Kausalya, she was She used it in a very bad way, though, trying to, convince her husband, demanding her husband to banish Ram to the forest. And if you don't, then this is going to happen. Don't you remember when I did this for you? And trying to, put him on the hot spot. And of course, Vidura. Vidura was, he was in this diplomacy atmosphere his whole life. He was born into it. And was surrounded by it constantly in a very bad way. But he used it also to save the Pandavas. We remember he kind of helped them escape out of that house of lack. And then, but that kind of got him in trouble because he didn't tell Bhishma. And trying to, figure out the best thing, of course, how to manipulate things, the best thing for him, ultimately for the Pandavas, but that got him in big trouble with Bhishma later, who found out that he knew that they were okay, and he never even told them. I also remember Karna, during that assembly, Duryodhan could see that Karna was actually more expert than Arjuna in fighting. He could see that actually he was a better archer, but they wouldn't allow him to partake in that competition. So he said, okay, you're not a kingly person. Actually, here's a kingdom for you right now. I think it was Anga or something like that. Here, you become a king of this. Because he wanted him on his side, because he could see someday he'll be able to kill Arjuna. He'll be better than Arjuna. So he used that principle of giving somebody a post, trying to convince him to be his friend forever and ever. And he did. He actually made his friend, and he used him to the utmost, made him feel very obligated. So these are some of the actions of diplomacy, both good and bad. And of course, the gopis. Krishna relishes hearing some of the diplomatic conversations and dealings that the gopis have with Krishna. It seems like Krishna relishes that more than anything, hearing how they can, with their different rhetoric and things like that, and everything, they can get around Krishna in so many different ways by turning things around and backwards and forwards. And Krishna just loves it. But in general, the devotee is non-duplicitous. Devotees are meant to be very simple, truthful, very much, outward in their dealings. And we saw that with Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada, because of that, won our trust completely. He walked the talk. Whatever he said, he actually did. We didn't feel like he was out to control us or to, rake our pockets or anything like that. And he was always very protective of us from different other things that were going on, from other bogus gurus and things like that. And even Prabhupada had the In God Trust Me party at one time, trying to see if we could maybe make some headway in politics. But then he saw how nasty it was, how that no truthfulness, backbiting, things like that. So he stopped it, even though he really wanted to go in that direction. And he had a couple enthusiastic persons that were becoming involved in that. But he pulled us out. He said, no, this is not for the devotee, not now anyway. Especially because we were in our spiritual infancy, and very likely we could have been dragged into some situation where we would have to have been compromising. So he took us out of that. Because Papa was really simply only trying to make us happy. I was just listening to a tape by chance yesterday, and Papa was doing a marriage ceremony, and he was saying that, I really shouldn't be doing this. I mean, it's kind of unheard of. Sannyasis just don't do this. But he says, I'm here because I just want to make you happy. I can understand that you all are going to have trouble, that you're not happy being a man and woman separate, that you want to be together. And he said it about three times. He said, I just want to make you all happy, so I'm doing this. So Srila Prabhupada had to change some things just to keep us on the spiritual path. So he had then developed different tactics also to spread this movement. But it was interesting one time that some devotees were in a room and they were saying about how Nixon was engaged in some very nasty diplomacy. And they were expecting, you know, they actually explained the Watergate incident where they were going in and, you know, tried to tap different things and going on the enemy side, supposedly, and trying to get, you know, information. And so they were expecting Prabhupada to come back and say, oh, yeah, he's a devotee. He should have been, you know, this. And you can just see what a horrible guy he was. And, yeah, this is your leader. But Prabhupada said, no, he shouldn't be chastised. He shouldn't be, nothing should happen to him. He says, it's expected. He says, this is what, you know, they need to do in this circumstance. And so everyone was very surprised that it can be diplomatic when you are a leader and you're a materialistic leader, and this is what has to be done. And we see that too in the Mahabharata. Some of the diplomacy was recognized as okay. But for devotees in general, we don't do that. But here we see that Kamsa is the typical big diplomat and sinful person. But ironically enough, he's being threatened by a little 3 or 4 month old little baby. And that is something that we can relish, seeing that Krishna, in no matter what state of existence, he is the supreme, and he can bring down anybody. He can make anyone scared, you know, shaking in their boots over him. And that reading Bhagavatam, especially 10th canto, coming across all these different pastimes of Krishna, and especially in his babyhood, are very relishable, even more relishable. And Krishna becomes more lovable and worshipable by us, hearing that he can bring down such as this Kamsa, and so many, you know, Trinavarta, and then now we're going to hear about showing the universal form, doing wonderful things, even as a child. So Krishna's very good at stirring up trouble, just to bring out his glories. And Prabhupada liked that too, when the Krishna consciousness movement would stir up trouble and bring out the glories of Krishna more and more. He would actually like to see that we were a threat in different countries, and that now look, just see, they're afraid of Krishna. Just like that, we are a threat. We're a threat to the normal, so-called normal, hellish life of material existence. And we're a threat to the so-called enjoyment, which ends up in misery, because we can give the real enjoyment. And we're a threat to the greatest enemy of lust, because we can satisfy lust by learning how to love Krishna. So this is what Srila Prabhupada wanted to see with our movement, that we would be successful. And we're only successful because of the purity of Srila Prabhupada, the simplicity and purity of the message from Krishna. And he did have a plan to manipulate the whole world using his different tactics that Lord Chaitanya gave. Lord Chaitanya gave two things. He gave the holy name, and he gave his beauty. So we should try to spread Lord Chaitanya's glories all over the world and let people know about this holy name, this process that is so simple and pure and that can change everybody. It can change the world so that, yes, as Prabhupada hoped, that Krishna would be a household word. And he also had a plan, a big tactic, and that was Mayapur. He said that all the leaders of the world would come there and learn about Krishna. And so now we see that also is going to happen. And if possible, and with Amrishma's enthusiasm, it might happen in our lifetime. We might actually see that happen. And I'm sure Prabhupada is smiling right now like anything, seeing us work full speed to make something so attractive that all the leaders of the world will come. And I think Srila Prabhupada's tactics of making all our temples educational centers is becoming more prominent. It's more of a mission in our, right now. And then also these Rathiatras are wonderful because they sweep up people from, you know, their sense of gratification on the beaches, and all of a sudden they're, you know, chanting the holy names and pulling the rope, as we see. And then we find them, of course, the biggest weapon tactic is prasadam. Last night we had a meeting for the Rathiatras coming up, and you know, the main talk is prasadam. What's a menu? What's a menu? What are we gonna? You know, what's our ammunition this time, and how we can make it more available? How we can get more people taking prasadam? So now we're thinking of actually taking all the leftovers and going on the beach itself, where all the people are afraid to come up on the beach, you know, because they don't want to leave their little spots, and going there and somehow or other distributing prasadam. And how we might, you know, pull a cart or something along with the cart so that they make sure everyone gets prasadam. So this is our mentality, and Srila Prabhupada's and Krishna's mentality is how to change this world, how to have a revolutionary change of consciousness back to Krishna consciousness. And if we become the greatest threat, that's great. And here, Gargamuni is a little worried about Krishna, which is nice. That's his mood, and all the mood of Brajavasi, that Krishna will manage. So let's just protect him right now, and he'll have the greatest effect on everybody. And we see that that's true, because Krishna's behind this movement. Otherwise, it wouldn't be so successful. So maybe some people have some additions, subtractions, and other comments in this regard? Yes?
I have a question. I'm a little confused, and maybe we're supposed to be a little puzzled by this, because we have two things going on. One is that Gargamuni says, if I perform an elaborate birth ceremony, then Kamsa will realize that Krishna was part of the Yama dynasty and he was born of Devaki. But the Yogamaya said that Krishna's born elsewhere. He's already born elsewhere. But if he's born elsewhere, how could he be the son of Devaki? So, you see what I'm saying? So it seems like there's two different confusions going on there. And I'm not exactly sure how to reconcile it, and Pran didn't make it this morning, so he can't give us the...
I don't know. But I guess he's trying to cover all the bases. But I think that, I don't know. I can't think about it. I don't know why. It says, although Yogamaya had appeared as a daughter of Devaki, she might have been forbidden to disclose this fact. Anyway, from all sides, he was getting warnings, so I guess he's taking heed of all of them. Yes, over here, maybe there's some answers.
Diplomacy when he was getting Radhalandanishwar.
Oh, yeah.
And he went in to see the donated deities, and oh, they're very nice, and we'll take them right now.
That's okay. We'll deliver them. No, we'll take them right now. Pull up the truck.
And also in Juhu, the guru was sleeping. Come over here and sign the papers.
What was this?
Yeah. That's not what I was going to say. I was just adding, when Prabhupada was trying to get the paper signed for the Juhu project, was it Mr. Nair that brought his lawyer, or Mrs. Nair? Anyway, the guru brought the guru because he was afraid of dealing with Prabhupada alone. But Prabhupada fed them prasadam so sumptuously, and then he said, let's all take a little rest. So while the guru was sleeping, Prabhupada had the disciple go and wake Mr. Nair, and they went and signed the paper. But I wanted to tell a little story that I had heard from Govindadasi last time I was in Vrindavan about something that happened during the Iron Curtain days and the devotees practicing Krishna consciousness under so much duress. There was a couple. They were both in the KGB. The wife was also the mayor of the village in which they lived. And the husband apprehended a Krishna book from someone. And he was interested in it. And he just his other co-workers told him, "Don't read that, it's so bad, it's so dangerous," which made him curious. And so he snuck it home and was reading it very surreptitiously. And the more he read, the more he became convinced. And then he gave up eating meat, and people started criticizing him, and he stopped working for the KGB, which normally would have made them want to kill him. In fact, they even threatened to kill him. And he said, "That's okay, you can kill me if you want. I'm not this body. I don't die." And so then they decided that he was so insane there was no point in killing him because he wasn't a threat. So he just stayed home and worshipped Krishna and read these books. But his wife was still in the KGB and she was still the mayor. And he was thinking, "How can I convince my wife?" So he decided to trick her. This was his diplomacy. The one thing that his wife was totally attached to was the television. So he unplugged the television and put Prabhupada's book on top of it. So in order to re-plug the television, she had to get down on her hands and knees. And the next day, she wanted to read the books. It was just like inadvertently. He'd also been offering food and feeding her prasadam. But the day after she was on her hands and knees in front of the book, she became interested. And then a couple days after I heard this story, I met the two of them in Ganga Prasad along with their grown-up son named Balaram. So
nice. Yeah, we can see even with this last issue of, and I guess it was Beckenstein or whatever it was, that got the Bhagavad Gita issue, that it was a threat. And it's wonderful. It made more people want to read the book. And actually brought the attention to the Indian government. They backed us the whole way, and they got up in arms, and it was wonderful. Wonderful. Anything else? Jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai.